Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, July 16th, 1998. In the Creekside room this afternoon is Ana Maria Pineda. Session number is 98-3 and is titled Holy Places and the Sanctuary of Chimayo. Let's listen in.
You can start the tape. My name is Ana Maria Pineda, and I think most of you have already heard the introductions. I'm originally from Central America. I was born in El Salvador, but came to the States when I was 2 years old, and my parents moved to the San Francisco area. But the neighborhood that's called the Mission, and it's the neighborhood where the Hispanic community lives, even to this very day, it is the Hispanic community of San Francisco. I'm a sister of mercy, a Catholic, a nun. And today what I'm going to present is the whole idea of sacred places. And I'll be using the shrine or the sanctuary of Chimayo, which is in New Mexico, as an example of a sacred place. But I hope also that the conversation will help us identify our own sacred places and places that we attach sacredness to. Those of you who attended the one of home altars, there is some resemblance, but at the same time, there's another theme that will follow. Some of the ideas I'm going to share with you come from the work of Iliad, who did a lot with world religions. And he proposes that there's two ways of being in the world, two modes of being in the world. One is the sacred and one is the profane. But actually, there are some cultures where the sacred and the profane, there's very little difference because the sacred permeates everything. And it's because at the moments of sacred interactions with the divine, there is a manifestation of the divine. And so what is ordinary, or seems to be ordinary, really is sacred, really bears the presence of the divine. However, for other people, the space that they and women occupy is the same. There's no major difference. If anything, there's a certain uneasiness to even think that there might be sacred places in our life or sacred spaces that one could have access to. So let me just give you a couple of examples where people do feel the sacredness around a place or a site. And these are personal examples, although many of you must know the famous Machu Picchu in Peru. And those are an incredible mountain range that was carved out practically in terms of the valley and the way the ancient Incas lived. But if you go to the top of the mountain area and you look down, there is a river that runs through the valley. And the indigenous people would say that that is the womb of Mother Earth, that is what gives life, from which life flows. And that is a sacred space. And the mountains are the highest points which have access to the divine. So you have a connection between that which is the surface of the earth, if you will, the place of where mortals live and occupy, connected to the deepest point of the womb, to the highest point of the mountain. So there's a connection between that of our earthly existence mediated through the mountains to the divine, to the sacred space. There was another experience that I had, fairly similar, and different in many ways, and that was in the Philippines. I was sharing that with someone the other night. There's a group of women, it's a community of women in the mountains that are led by a woman abbess. I mean, that's the closest word we have, but she's not a religious community, doesn't belong to a religious sisterhood, but it is a religious womanhood. And she is called Mother, and she is the one that directs the community in all its activities, and they look at her upon her as a religious leader. But when you come to this sacred place, there is a whole ritual of purification that you are invited to participate in. And I had the privilege of participating in it. And we were led by two Filipino women who were much smaller than any of us from the U.S. and very petite. And the ritual takes you in a procession through different sites where there's sources of water. And at each place where there's a source of water, you are invited to enter into a ritual of purification. At one site, for example, your hands are cleansed. At another site, your face is cleansed. At another site, you actually drink the water so that the inside of you is cleansed. And you move from like little streams to greater bodies of water until when you come to, I forget exactly what they call it, but it's like the mother source of water. And it's a waterfall. You know, you can imagine the 10-mile waterfall, but not quite as big, but very generous in water supply. And then each individual is invited to stand underneath the waterfall and just let the water cascade upon you. And you just feel the power of the water coming upon your body. And it literally takes your breath away, the force of the water. You can't even breathe. But it's almost as if from place to place, you're being invited into a deeper and almost more difficult ritual of purification. The ultimate is the going down into the earth, into the bowels of the earth, into a cave that leads you into the bowels of the earth. And at that point, I must tell you, it was a mixed group of men and women, and the women said, we'll do it first. So there were a group of four or five of us. And the two Filipino women went into the cave just to provide some small candles that they put on the side of the tunnel that kind of leads you in so that we would have some light. But that was for us, because ordinarily they would do it in pure darkness. Mm-hmm. So you start sliding into the mouth of the cave, which is rock. You have no idea what's there. And I have to say, it's confronting your fear, confronting almost your mortality, and entering into an encounter with the sacred, you know, with what is deepest in the heart and of men and women, the deepest part of our being. So you begin to slide into this cave, and you are literally kind of trying to work your way down the side of the cave, which is rock. And at one point, at one juncture, the tunnel ends, and there's like a ledge and a drop. And you make your way down the ledge and the drop, and you find yourself on another ledge, which is rock. And on the rim of that ledge is a source of water. So once you make it down there, you kind of leap from the mouth of the tunnel, which ends, and kind of slide yourself down so that you're on the ledge. And then against the rim of the ledge, of the rock ledge, they have placed a ladder. And you are to climb onto the ladder and immerse yourself into the water. They have not been able to find any bottom to that source of water. So you have no idea what the bottom is. And I don't like to cover my head with water. I mean, under any circumstance. The shower is the closest thing I come to. But this is part of the purification ritual. I thought, well, if I've gone this far, I guess I might as well go all the way. So you immerse yourself three different times, and then you come up. And the rest of the women or anyone else who has done it is waiting for you on the ledge. And then you need to make your way up again through the bowels of the earth, up again to light. So for them and for you when you participate in it, it's a very scary moment and also a very profoundly sacred moment at the same time. And you realize the power of the depths of the earth, as we also have the power of the heights of the world for the creation. And this is another example of how earth is mediated by the divine and by the heavens. So you have that example. An example from scripture, from the Old Testament, in terms of sacred places, is the very familiar reading from Exodus, where Moses sees the burning bush. So if I could read it, I think it would give us also another perspective. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the holy place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. So in that reading, we see the notion of sacred ground, sacred space, and how there is both that frightening and overwhelming power of the divine. Moses is frightened, and at the same time, the invitation to enter into that space. And many cultures do that. I think we do that if we think about it. There's always a center to our universe, a place where everything else flows from. And sacred space, what it does for us, it creates a threshold that allows us to cross over from the ordinary into the extraordinary. You imagine a church building, for example. The church is occupying the same neighborhood space as all the other homes and stores and everything else. But when you enter through the door or the threshold of the church, you have entered a different kind of space. So it is a sacred space. And that threshold allows us to move from one plane to another plane, from the ordinary to the extraordinary. There's another reading which makes this also very obvious, and this is the reading from Genesis and Jacob and the ladder story. I'm just going to do just a slight introduction, and then we'll see the video, but I thought it would be helpful to give you some preliminary comments. It's from Genesis chapter 28. Jacob left Beersheba and went toward Haran. He came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring. And your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place and I do not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place. This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called the place Bethel. But the name of the city was Luz at the first. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will keep me and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house, and of all that you give me, I will surely give one-tenth to you. What we see in this reading, among many other, is that when a sacred event occurs, there is a sacred encounter. The place becomes a significant and sacred place. And in our own human way of remembering that or establishing that as a center of the world for us, as a place that is sacred, we place something on it. He puts a stone and he pours oil on it. We place a shrine. We place a temple in indigenous times. We put a church. There is something built upon it, a pillar, a column, that identifies for us the sacred place. And so everything around it also shares in that sacredness. And in the story of the ladder, once again, there is this sense of connection. The earth is connected to the heaven by the ladder. So the human is connected to the divine through the ladder. What are some holy sites that we can identify? There are at least three, and Chimayo will be an example of one. Holy sites and sanctuaries are believed to be established at the center of the earth or at the center of sacredness, sacred space. Temples are replicas of mountains, which once again represent a link between earth and heaven. And temples, the foundations of temples going down into the lower regions, also establishes for us like the navel of the earth or the womb of the earth, the deepest part of the earth, which is the sacred core, which is also then connected to the universe, to the upper regions of the sacred. So I hope that this gives us a little bit of background. What we're going to see is only a portion of the video because it's close to 50 minutes. But in this portion of the video, the Temple of Chimayo is found in the northern part of New Mexico. It is approximately 170 years old. It's built, it's an adobe church or a little chapel. It was built in 1816, and people that go there find in it a sense of the sacred, a sense of the mystical holiness, and find it in a place of healing as well, and a place where they can meet the God. They can have a connection to the sacred, relevance to the sacred. So I won't say much more than that because the video will explain it.
Yes, you know, I think this place is sacred. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we, you know, return and return and return. And there's been so many, you know, instances of coincidences and healing that had occurred here. I've been coming here for a long time. I kind of get weak inside when I think about it. And though I mean, there's so many examples, but the one that for me is very dramatic. I don't know if maybe some of you know Josh, who's a waitress, who should have died 2 years ago. Having, you know, kind of just watched that his survival through an impossible accident up here. When I see the scar that remains on his forehead, it's just kind of this.
Of the intervention and the sacred. And what I want to do is I just set those a little preliminary comments to help us kind of focus on the fact that this is an experience of all humanity, but the difficulty and the challenge is that we don't give consciousness to it. So in this way, we could think of it as a practice of being conscious of holy places and the power of holy places. And Chimayo is an example, but what I want to do afterwards is have us, as you're doing now, thinking about what other holy places are there, which are a source of light, a source of God's manifestation to us, a source of healing for us, a source of power for us, of consolation, of conversation with God, along that line. So you're anticipating very well. Now, Sadhguru, you put out the video yesterday. Could you help me? Is it as simple as just turning that on? Well, what I meant is the two. I wanted to show a whole video. Yeah, the video's already on. So you have a copy, then I can do that. So it begins already like maybe 5 minutes into, and I'm going to show for about 20 minutes.
El Santuario itself was built by a small group of villagers who believed God had called them to construct such a shrine. They made it simple and familiar, a folk church, a place filled with images of the spirit, but attuned also to the sense and sound of daily life. Since that time, the Santuario has been a bridge between the everyday and the transcendent.
Thank you. killing, if you will. It just overpowers a person. You cannot explain guilt.
So what is it about this place? It's not as if El Santuario were a great cathedral where everything looms larger than life, huge and stretching heavenward. It's more down to earth, built on a human scale, a small church made out of mud bricks. But people claim there's a feeling here, a feeling that can't really be seen in images, that can't really be explained in words.
There's a special feeling inside the chapel that you don't look for anywhere else but inside the chapel.
I cannot express it to anybody. I just feel it and I believe in it.
Was meant to stay at this sacred spot. People started coming to touch the ground where Esquipula had been buried, and many of the sick were miraculously healed.
They were cured instantly, only the touch of the place where they found the crucifix. They started calling the holy ground the miraculous crucifix of Esquipula.
The villagers built El Santuario to mark the sacred site. And for more than 170 years, the faithful have believed in the healing powers of this shrine and its holy dirt.
Lightning can be pretty close here. We've had lightning hit trees that are very close to us. And it would get that bad. She would just go to that, always kept it there by the fireplace, go over and get that and just sprinkle it all over the windowsills and the doors. You know, felt that that was going to protect us.
Some husband came with a tremendous toothpick. He just put it down. And his wife said, "Get a big thing down there, put it in your teeth." And it went away.
Well, I've got some right here in my pocket, man. I spray it around where I live.
What do you mean, cool? You know, I spray it on my flower beds. And I have beautiful gardens. It's so nice. Yes, that's my vision.
And I still get people inside to ask for a glass of water because they've just eaten some holy dirt and they want to wash their throat out and clear it out. It's still part of the tradition, a very old tradition that people haven't forgotten.
Some people put it on any secret accounts. And some people get up in there and turn it into water and drink it and they say they got it.
About 8 years ago I broke my ankle and it wouldn't heal and it wouldn't heal and it wouldn't heal. And we went to Chimayo, I got some dirt, poured it on my ankle, and I personally feel through my own faith that that's what helped me. Have to heal without having to do any kind of surgery to it.
I have two friends that are dying of AIDS, and I have AIDS virus in me right now, and I believe that is what I have faith in this, and I think that it will cure anything that the science is going to cure right now at the present time.
Because God sent the dirt to us, ordered it to my own.
The town's name is Esquipula. Every year, pilgrims from all over Central America check here to this towering basilica. The faithful crowd inside, making the devotions before the famed crucifix of our Lord of Esquipula, the same representation of Christ we find in El Santuario. And it is a likeness of this image that is often stamped on small cakes made of clay, cakes that are eaten by the pilgrims here. This is their holy dirt, and they believe it can cure them of sickness. Some think the traditions of this holy place in Guatemala directly influenced the creation of El Santuario. It's thought that Bernardo Abeta heard of the place, perhaps even traveled there, and brought back the name of Esquipula to the people of his remote valley in northern New Mexico. And there's something else. These Christian shrines and rituals have pre-Christian roots. The Guatemalan shrine was first built atop an ancient Indian one. So too the Santuario. It was built on sacred Indian ground, Long before the Spanish first arrived, Tewa Indians used the mud around the area of El Santuario for its sacred healing powers.
The sanctuary itself, living the tradition of centuries before from the Indians, for the healthy water, the ground, the dirt.
The history and myth surrounding Esquipula, an image transplanted from a far-off country, is largely unknown today. But use of the holy dirt, a native phenomenon, in existence here for untold centuries, goes on. Some believe that El Pasito, the hole in the earth, never empties, that it miraculously refills itself. The holy dirt has come to represent the essence of earth with all its sacred associations, that which we come from and return to. Mother Earth, earth is womb, earth is fertility, earth is sustenance, as restoration, as regeneration, as life and death.
A little girl, Michelle, she's only 10. I mean, she has been growing up knowing about how all this little...
I'm sorry to end this. But I think it gives you an idea of the history of it and how it's experienced by people, different people. There is a very short portions of an article that I want to read. One of my colleagues at Santa Clara University went to Chimayo and has continued to go back to Chimayo and wrote this article, which I'm going to share in portions. Thank you. He calls it Sacred Mix, a mystical marriage of indigenous culture and Christianity. This popular U.S. pilgrimage site has an inexplicable pool. And the author is Martin Cook. I admit the first time I visited, I thought it only quaint and interesting. Even now, I really can't say what I found here, what I find here, or why I return, but return I do. And it's something more than love of novelty and the quake that draws me. El Santuario de Chimayo exerts an inexplicable pull, even for this Protestant of rational leanings. And then he proceeds to say, the sacredness of the site is older than any of this, meaning the Spanish arrival. Long before the Spanish arrived, the Tewa-speaking pueblos of the Rio Grande Valley also regarded Chimayo as one of the four flat-top sacred hills of their cosmology. These dark hills were deemed dangerous for all but the priests, inhabited as they were by Toa'e, little people. The hills serve as a middle space, mediating between the metaphorical and mythical time of emergence from the world below, from which the Pueblo peoples believe they came, and the ordinary time of the present. The hills would have had an earth navel, an opening in the ground, that was the point of contact between this world and the spiritual world. One contemporary Tewa describes the function of an earth navel. An earth navel is like an airport. You notice how airplanes, no matter where they go, always have to return to an airport. In the same way, all things, being, people, and spirits, always return to the earth navel. Just little quotes from it. So now, yes.
The crucifix, it wasn't, one said about the crucifix, it was that was found in the ground, is it there in the santuario?
I believe it was a crucified Christ, and they brought it to the santuario.
And it's there now?
Yes. The reason, I just couldn't show it to you in complete form, and so I just showed you the portions of it.
What's the theory behind that? Was it from...
I mean, the
origin of that, was it from another mission in another era, or?
There's no explanation for it. It's a sacred revelation or manifestation of the sacred. And it said there that the farmer that found it took the crucifix and tried to put it elsewhere. He tried this three different times, and three different times it returns. The power behind the story is, in essence, to say that there are experiences that we have in certain places that establish like the essence of the sacred for us, or the navel of the sacred for us. And that at those sites then, such things as churches or temples or sanctuaries are built in order to cement the sacred center of the world, the sacred site from which everything else will emerge or radiate from. And as a matter of fact, that's what happens in the coming of the Spaniards and Christianity, that they tear down the temples which were built when it was established as their sacred places. And the churches were built upon the ruins of the temple to reestablish a different meaning to that sacred space. But in the Chimayo story, it is this crucifix that mysteriously appears.
And where is it located? What major town or city is Chimayo?
It's in northern New Mexico.
Near Taos?
Yeah, between Santa Fe and Taos.
Between Santa Fe and
Taos. I've never been.
No.
But the Chimayo story is interesting, and you might want to make some comments about it, but I'm probably more interested in knowing or having us talk about a little bit what for us could be thought of as sacred spaces or sacred places where the sacred somehow comes in contact, we come in contact with the sacred. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And you started to talk about Holden Village, for example. A holy place would be, for me, like the Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe, which has a very deep significance, and once again, the apparition of Guadalupe appears on the site where the indigenous feminine aspect of the divine was worshipped. And on that site of the Tepeyac, Guadalupe appears, and it's upon that site that the basilica is built, where people can come and be remembered, or be reminded by it.
Yes, I guess, clearly a church is always a sacred place, but I think it's even more sacred or special when there's an event that's held there that's special to you. So the church that I belong to, where I was married, will always be a special place for me, a particularly holy place for me, just because of that event taking there with all of my family there.
Another dimension of sacred spaces or places for us is sometimes where memorable events occur for us that hold this kind of spirit for us, or power for us, or remembrance of.
You know, in a way I kind of disagree, not with what you know. I don't think all churches are sacred. I think some of them are almost profane. There's some that I can think of that.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, by and large, you think of the church as being a sacred or a holy place. But I can understand what you're saying. If there's one that has a persona, so to speak, where it's not really doing God's will, it's going against God's will. Mm-hmm. can see how that might help you.
He's just something to kind of think about and be conscious of. You know, is a church a sacred, just interesting to think about, you know, is it a sacred place?
Yes, Paul. I was just going to say, I think your suggestion that we might be more open to the idea of having or finding sacred space is such a valuable one, that we might be more aware, so that places of particular insight maybe or something would become a sacred space for us that maybe isn't a sacred space for anyone else.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what you were saying. The sacred needs is kind of in the eyes of the beholder.
And the experience of
you. And their experience. So you could say virtually any place could be a sacred place for somebody. And so to say that that place is profaning is saying that, well, they don't agree with me, so they can't be sacred.
It seems
to me.
Could be a sacred place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Place of epiphany, where God comes.
I guess all I meant was that just because somebody's built a building there doesn't necessarily mean that it's sacred ground.
But there probably is someone that thinks that that is sacred ground. Whether we think they do or we think it is or not, they probably do. And therefore any place could be sacred place to a given party.
I can think, for example, of my home parish where I grew up at St. Peter's. In San Francisco, there is a very special attraction or connection or spirit that makes that community, or that kind of imbues that community, and to which we all feel drawn, even when we're away from a distance. It kind of nourishes us. And my brother, Dr. Longo, said, he said one day, when I die, I think I'd like to be buried at St. Peter's Church. Like all kinds of special family events have occurred there, baptisms of children, first communions, confirmation, burials. My father was buried, and the funeral celebration took place there. So for us, that holds a very special significance, and it's sacred. It has a sacredness about it that no other church might hold for us for one reason or another. You wanted to say something, then. We're
fighting for airtime.
That's good, though.
Well, there's a few things going through my mind, but let me say one of them first. I am really intrigued by things like this, and have been. And having grown up Protestant, I was taught not to trust in stuff like that. And my father-in-law is now a retired missionary, and we were traveling with them in Canyon de Chelly not long ago, and that place is the sacred place for the native people who live there. And I was, I felt like it was a sacred place when I was there. We have to have a guide to go in the canyon. And we had this guy, and he was telling us the wonderful stories of Spider Rock, and all I was reminded of that when he talked about the mediation thing between heaven and earth. And was eager to hear as many stories as he could tell me, and I was up there with him. During a particular rest stop, my father-in-law began to ask him whether he'd ever been to church, and kind of try to do his sort of thing with this guy.
Missionary activity.
I'm not sure. Pardon me?
The missionary activity.
Missionary activity. But for me, this is one place. I mean, you said that I get so confused. I just don't know what to think. For me, that was a very unfortunate thing that he was doing in that place at that time. And I was getting so much that was very sacred from listening to his stories. And, you know, here we sit. I'm Protestant now. I don't know how to think about all of that. Holding the...
To think of say a little more.
How this business of Christianity weaves itself through all of it.
Did your father-in-law, did he have a sense of the sacred when he was there? Like you were having?
No.
Not at all.
But you did. No, but I did, yeah. Right. No, he has a certain glasses he looks at the world through, and I know that. But it was just, well, I mean, he was in Japan and the Philippines, and in the Philippines he was converted to Catholics to, you know, something that he thought was more Christian than what they were doing.
Well, I think this is something that all of us have participated in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. So how do you, I mean, I just sort of sit with, okay, I don't understand how this works. I know that I was in a sacred place there. And
well, I think today we would look at it differently, and we would say that we need to acknowledge the fact that God is much bigger than any of us can possibly ever imagine or understand or describe, and is beyond and above all cultures and all groups, so that the presence of the divine is there among people before any of missionary activity takes place. And if anything, in terms of 16th century Spain and the newly discovered lands, which, you know, had been there, that was one of the misfortunes, that they did not recognize the presence of the divine that was already there. I mean, the indigenous peoples were extremely religious. The temple, the way the temple was built, you know, like if you look at Mexico, the great temple, they've done studies on it, and what they've discovered is that the temple is six of what they consider the navel of the earth, or the center of the earth, just the way we've been talking about, and how everything else radiates from that temple, so that everything surrounding it does become a sacred complex, so that what from the outside appeared to the missionaries as idolatrous was really a world in which the sacred permeated everything, because everything radiated, extended itself from the center of how we established their world, the construction of their world.
You know, it's interesting to me, I don't know quite how to vocalize this yet, but in light of the statement you're making, that the churches, Catholic churches, were built on these sites that were sacred to the native peoples, mm-hmm. and then in light of what she's saying, her father-in-law didn't consider these things sacred. I wonder if the Spanish had any idea that these places were sacred when they destroyed those temples, or if it was just convenient because this is where the people came for generations and generations to worship. This was their sacred spaces. But when the Spanish used every single way, trick, whatever you want to call it, that they could in order to convert the Indian people, they wanted the souls of these people. And so it's my idea that they probably had no feeling of the sacredness.
I was going to say something about that, because I'm a product of being missionized, and I'm a native person from Brazil. And I think the biggest problem is missionaries just see us pagans, devoid of soul, or devoid of ever having a religious or understanding a higher being. And that's not true. After I went through, you know, 14 years of catechism and becoming, you know, a good Catholic, I started really questioning what were better Christians, the people in the cities that were attached to Catholicism and went to church. They were very mean to my people at home, 1,200 days, or the people in the tribe that never left, that did not believe in private property, that everything was in the community. And I felt that they were in the community with Christ and the people in the city. I could never let them out. So I think that's the biggest problem, is that, you know, they just think that they're the table for boys. There is a place on space, we just don't have knowledge of the divided and all the principles that's been built in the Judeo-Christian tradition. But we have our own principles. Wrong is wrong. You know, no stealing, no killing, no treating your brother bad. It's a universal principle. And I think that's been the biggest problem.
And then also going back to sacred places, I was going to say that one of the most sacred places I've been to is the Pyramid of the Tepozteco, which is a small village in Tepoztlan, Mexico. When I was, the summer of my junior year in college, I was in an orphanage. I was a volunteer in an orphanage and happened to be in this sacred place where everybody talked about it. And when they explained to me, their tone of voice would even change. Oh, you got to go there. You know, there was something special. And it was very hard to climb because it was on top of a hill. And it was also the birthplace of Quetzalcoatl in their legend. And it was also one of the only pyramids in Mexico that was not destroyed. Mm-hmm. To build a church on top because mm-hmm. people like hushed and hushed, never said anything about it for so many years. So there's lots of sacred places.
When I did it, unfortunately, the session time is ending. But I want to make sure to give you've been wanting to say something.
Oh, well. No, I was just going to mention that for me there's a particular church, not my own church, but the church, a friend of mine is a pastor at this church, that has a particular upper room which is surrounded on three sides by windows, mm-hmm. and it's a large room with three or four couches, and the very first time I walked into that room, I felt like, oh, this is a place where I can just sit and rest and be in the presence of God. And it so happens that it's also the room where my friend leads me and a group of other clergy in Ignatian spiritual exercises. But one time I was the only one who showed up for our spiritual exercises group, and so we just sat in that room and didn't do anything but just sit there. And I left and I thought, yes, I've been in the presence of God, even though it was just the place I had been in at that time. So that is a place, definitely, where I can just walk and I can just immediately or very quickly feel as if I'm in the presence of God.
A place that's really important to me is to say France. I had the opportunity to go there when I was in college, doing on ecumenism and world perspective, and got to see the Vatican. And that also is another place when you visit the grave, what they believe is St. Peter's underneath the Vatican. And then you go up and you see the canopy over the main altar. It's inspiring. Mm-hmm. But Tizé, France was a place that as soon as I stepped into Church of Reconciliation, it's an ecumenical monastery, I was literally bowled over by the presence of God. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we left there after the first service, I was afraid. I was afraid to leave the presence of that place because I didn't want to. It felt so good, so awe-inspiring, so indescribable.
I think what's very important is that we not ignore the sacred presence that we all experience in one place or another. Within the household, mm-hmm. and there are also places of special remembrances for us, like you're mentioning, so that we need to begin the practice or have the practice of consciously making ourselves aware of these sacred spaces, these sacred places that nourish us, that remind us of who we are, that remind us of our relationship to God, and not to ignore that. Mm-hmm. Because if not, we fall into everything is like common. There's nothing sacred about it. And unfortunately, in today's society, that's how many of us live. There's no taking ourselves apart for a while, even in the quietness of the morning. Sometimes I have heard, you know, mothers whose days are so busy that the only time they have is like that 5 o'clock, 8 a.m. morning half hour or hour, and it's their bedroom or it's a porch or it's in a little corner of the kitchen or someplace. And while we do that on a daily basis, perhaps have those quiet moments, we also need to have the greater moments when we go to church on Sunday, our place of worship, where we go to a sacred site that nourishes us, that reminds us of the sacred presence. And to pass this on to the family, to the children, and not to be afraid to think that all creation is imbued with the sacred. I mean, that's the interesting thing about Chimayo. Later on in the film, the priest says that the people believe that it recreates itself every day, even though they know that they bring it in from the outer mountains. But it's the faith of the people that brings healing to them. So I think it's our faith that brings the healing and brings the sacred and makes it present to us. So I'd be happy to entertain more conversation. I'm just conscious of the fact that this session is...
You know, you mentioned Taizé. I thought of that Taizé chant, which is certainly portable. Surely God is in this place, holy ground.
Surely God is in this place. This is holy ground.
This is holy ground. But following along the idea that every place is holy.
And we do have these mystical moments, these moments of when you feel the sacred, perhaps in a stronger way, you know, than ordinary. But not to even make these distinctions as much between the sacred and the profane. Mm-hmm.
I think most of us come from a culture where we've lost sight of that. Mm-hmm. The Northern European culture basically has left that part of our higher culture behind. And it's interesting to be reintroduced to it and become re-aware. That's the word re-aware.
Sure. But we just made it.
And I think part of that, coming back to like what you were asking about with the sacred places in Spanish or in Central South, cultures, I don't think it was all ignorance. I mean, a lot of it was domination. Like, I know Cortez built his palace right on the temple.
Yeah, I'm sure it was more out of convenience than anything else.
What, just to crush spiritual?
Exactly.
Wasn't it also the indigenous tradition? I'm thinking of the ruins at Teotihuacan, where the original indigenous group was conquered, and then the next group built theirs right on top. They built right over it because they were afraid of the power of the god that was worshipped with that one, but also they wanted to suffocate that god out of this.
Usually, from what I understand, instead of destroying the god or burying the god, what they would do is incorporate those beliefs into their beliefs. Mm-hmm. Especially from the standpoint of the Aztecs. When the Aztecs supposedly got to Mexico, they were considered barbarians. They had no culture, they had no religion. They adopted from the neighboring tribes that they dominated. Mm-hmm. They incorporated the beliefs and the deities into their own pantheon of gods.
Yes, they speak a bit of the Native Americans in northern Mexico, and they have the lance and the wrist for their dance, and the dance begins in the church, and the dance goes to the plaza, and then they have their you know, Native dances. So they incorporated the two, understanding that it's the same God.
Exactly.
And the same thing happens like in the Basilica of Our Lady Guadalupe on the 12th of December, which is the feast, which I'm talking about next Monday, for those of you who might be interested. Inside, there's ritual going on. Outside, there's also ritual by the indigenous peoples, dancing and celebrating Guadalupe and what she means in the indigenous culture, which may not be the same of what she might mean in the Catholic you know, context. But it's the same sacred space in some way, but with a different relationship.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is Mardi Gras?
Tell us.
There, maybe you have something so sacrilegious to get ready for your religious season.
So you cross the threshold.
Yeah.
And what seems to be like ridiculous really walks you into a different moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the importance of ritual and processions and all those things, that they bring us into different thresholds of space that allow us to enter into a sacred place or a sacred space.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.